Paul Johnson here, and welcome to part one of our podcast. And I'm going to be talking about the interesting album that's come through to us to be reviewed. It's called The Minstrel of the Wasteland, and it's by an artist called Blue Nose B, otherwise known as Stephen. And and we're going to have a talk about that album. And he's here with me now. How are you, mate? Hello.
I'm absolutely fine, yeah.
Stephen Lawson, what a pleasure to meet you, because I got this biog through. You've got quite an interesting background, because you used to be around in Liverpool, that tough old city of Liverpool, alongside the Teardrop Explodes and Echo and the Bunnymen and all that. So you've been around quite a while. You're yeah. We're knocking on a bit, mate.
I have been around a long time. It doesn't seem that long, to be honest, because time goes very quickly.
Doesn't it just? So you sort of hail from the Liverpool area. Is it really, you know, I've never been there. I'd love to go to Liverpool, but I've never been. I've been to Scotland and a few other places, but Liverpool has eluded me so far. Is it as tough and gritty as everyone says it is?
Not anymore. It certainly was when I was young. I was actually out in Liverpool yesterday. Depending on where you go, it's very bohemian. Still a lot of money in Liverpool, because I think the capital, the culture, put a lot of money in. So we've sort of not been hit by the recession as much as other places. But it is an artistic hotbed.
Ah, well, that's good. That's what we're into, isn't it, really? So you've got an album out now. You've done lots of different albums over the years, but this is your latest work. I say work because it's quite an artistic thing. This is quite interesting. There's a lot of brilliant artwork that runs through this album, and there's a video that goes with it. And it's kind of your take on a world where music is banned and you're not allowed to enjoy it anymore. That would be terrible, wouldn't it? How did that come up? Now, before we go into that, let's just have a listen to the first track to give us a little feel, because this kind of sets the feel for the whole album. This is Minstrel of the Wasteland.
Down in the valley where the sun don't shine, there's a wasteland minstrel and he's almost blind, singing summer girl and drinking toxic.
I love that. I think that's a really good feel. And that kind of twangy guitars and everything kind of runs through. And we'll talk a bit more about that. Maybe pop in a couple of other little snippets of music as well from the album. So this idea about music being banned, where did that sort of stem from?
It stemmed from the growth in new technology. I'm not a Luddite. I believe that the growth in new technology is an incredible asset. But I think what should have happened is that development of technology should have given people more time to enjoy each other's company and enjoy art. It seems to have been used for people to make a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think I started to think about music and, you know, the closure of lots of venues. I'm sure you're aware of that. The end of lots of shows like this one, you know. I used to be able to listen to the radio, and you go from classical to, you know, local music, the folk scene, it's all going away. I think the powers that be via technology are sort of squashing art.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is really sad, I think.
Do you know what, Steve? I kind of agree with you, because I come from a radio background. I was in the radio industry for 30 years. Unfortunately, mostly, well, not unfortunately, it served me well, but I was in commercial radio, independent commercial radio, which has always been about the money, you know. And going back to the regional stations I worked at, they would only play a very limited playlist of hits. Like when I started in 93, 94, it's like Simply Red and all these sort of big artists, you know. And they'd rotate that over and over again, you know, and never really divulged into the real artistic singer-songwriter stuff. Okay, when trends came along, like, you know, a bit of grunge and that, maybe they put a bit of that on. But they do kind of squash it, don't they? And I always thought the BBC radio would be a kind of a century for that. But like you're saying, that's almost going away as well, isn't it?
I think what they've done is the record companies, the radio stations, when a new trend comes along, Not only do they squash it, they absorb it very quickly, and they make it as commercial as everything else. So they use it almost against the artist. So they'll narrow it down until it's exactly the same as everything else. And they won't let true originality flourish. And as you said, I think the singer-songwriter element is fading away. Yes. You have songwriters who work for houses and they write songs for multiple artists, but they don't sing them themselves, which is really a sad thing.
It is really. It's kind of like, you know, almost like becoming a machine, isn't it? And even though there's a lot of independent record labels around and that, it's a shame to see that happening. What I enjoyed over the years, having when I had smaller radio stations and I had radio stations that were more localised, and I ended up with shows on those, was that you could play what you wanted to. Maybe get told off for playing a bit of, you know, Killing Joke or a bit of Echo and the Bunnymen or a bit of that, or in my case, a lot of folk rock and that. And then they go, well, you shouldn't keep doing that. You know, but I only played a couple. People wanted it and I played it, so you can get away with it. But it's like battling against that, isn't it? And certainly what I call the sledgehammer brands, such as, you know, I won't mention them, the big global, and I mean global in two means of the word, who change all these radio stations to limited playing is quite sad. But anyway, back to your album, which is much more important. We digressed. I love it, and it's some beautiful songs in here, and it sort of tracks your almost an imaginable journey looking for people and looking for a way to enjoy music again, isn't it? It's kind of almost apocalyptic in its feel, I think. Would that be it?
I've tried to include hopeful songs, so the album, the concept is that hopeful music has been banned first. So songs like Hey Jude, you know, where it's saying, you know, okay, things are bad at the moment, but it's gonna get better. And I find that in music now, there's so many dark pieces of music, and obviously mine's quite dark with the way it starts out.
Yeah.
But as I progressively go through it, I'm hoping I'm adding some hope in it. More harmonies, the harmonies are trying to show the hopeful side, more songs about starting again and love and so on. And that's what I'm trying to achieve.
It's very much like that. If you listen to the album as an album, as a piece of work, you start off with Minstrel of the Wasteland and you go on to tracks like track two, Ride and Razor Glass, Medley. It's a beautiful sort of almost like a folky instrumental. I'll have a little play of that in a second. But you've also, as you say, got some quite hopeful tracks in here. One that stuck out on me as a hopeful one was Razor Glass. That's a nice kind of sort of out of track.
One of my best friends, he was only in his early 50s, he was the head coach for Everton FC.
Really? Wow.
And just, we went on a golfing holiday, and I said to him on the plane, I'm not playing golf, I'm just getting drunk.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah, yeah.
And he said, well, so am I. And then, unfortunately, not long after that, he passed away. And I was so happy that I'd had that holiday with him where we could just be ourselves and just, you know, get drunk and remember the old times, because we don't realise how quickly it can end.
That's very true. That's a lovely sentiment, and I totally agree. You know, sometimes we, as people, I don't know, not take for granted, but kind of don't realise. You know, I've got a friend at the moment who's got prostate cancer, and I've known him since I was at school, and he's been really ill lately. He's kind of shrunk in weight and everything. He's still going and he's still okay, just about. But I'm saying to him, mate, we've got to meet up, you know, because he lives down in Peterborough, you know. And it's nice to have those memories, isn't it, and look back on them. Let's have a little listen to Razor Glass, because I think this is a nice little track.
Thank you.
yeah. You know what? It's one of those tracks you don't want to switch off, Stephen. It's a shame to kill it because I just love it. It's got a great feel to it, and that features Simon Swalb there on the fiddle as well. There, I can hear. Yeah. What's he like to work with? Is he a genius?
John Cattle won't really let me meet him. I'm a very intense human being, and Simon is a very gentle human being. So John Cattle says, we'll keep you away from Simon. But we have a great laugh, me and John, about things like that.
Yeah, how did you get to know John Cattle? Because obviously, do you go back a long way, you two?
Yeah, we've worked together now for about 17 years.
Really? Wow.
My son, who was a classically trained musician, went in John's studio when he was 15, and he asked me to come in and do some producing. I met John, and John, same age as me, we had the same interests, we had the same love of music, and then I just started working with him. And to be honest, I never thought it was going to achieve anything. Virginia, his wife, sang a few songs for me, and then my mum died in 2019, and as John says, musicians are very, very lucky in that we can grieve by creating music.
So I
went in and I said, John, look, I want to do it properly now. You know, we've been doing great music, really enjoyed it. I want to do an album. So we did the album. My cousin, who's a fantastic singer, sang the whole thing. And I thought, that really worked. So I'm going to start creating albums again. Virginia's sang one of the albums, and I've sang the last one and then this one. So we've worked together for 17 years.
Wow. It certainly works.
It's almost telepathic.
Yeah.
The way we work, I can literally send them a song and it could come back, the basis of the song, exactly how I imagined it.
Is that brilliant, though? Isn't that great when you do that? That's a rare thing to get, and it's something you need to hang on to, because I play in a band. My band's called Shinaki, and we play in a four-piece folk rock. And I've only just met, really, relatively quite recently, the two guys, the bassist and the mandolin player, and certainly the drummer who's just come in, our new drummer. But there's a chemistry there. I mean, the guy comes... I live down on the Kent coast. He lives up in Gravesend, which is quite a way away, if you know the geography. But he comes down every week to my little studio because he loves what we do. And we send each other, like you've just said, we send each other ideas for songs. I send him a little bit of a riff or something I've worked out. And he'll come back a couple of weeks later and go, yeah, I like that. This is what I've done with it. And that's such a rare thing to have, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I'm going to play a little bit of Madry. Is it Madry?
Yeah,
it's beautiful, yeah. This is. Have a little listen to this. This is a really nice piece of music. Yeah, and that kind of took me by surprise, because the album is quite up-tempo and quite floaty. I love the floaty feel of it. And then Madry comes on, and it's kind of floaty and soft and mellow. What brought Madry around?
Once again, I wrote that when my mum passed away.
Ah, beautiful.
And I wanted to challenge myself, because John is a far better guitarist than me. So I wanted to do something that was slightly classical, slightly Spanish in origin, and I played all the guitar pieces, sent it to John, and said, could you bring the best out of that? And he did. It's something I listen to when I think about my mum.
Oh, that's a beautiful thing. And it takes quite a while, doesn't it, to write songs in grief like that. My father passed away from motor neurone disease many years ago now, and it took me 6 years to write a song for him, which I wrote a song called The Bridge for him, and I can't play it because I cry every time I play it. So we recorded it in the studio down in Brighton at the Leveller studio, and we came out of the live room and everyone was crying. So I don't often play. In fact, I've never played it live because it makes me cry so much. But there you go. I love that as we go through the album, there's Spanish Sun speech is a little bit there. There's Madry is Spanish in its fill, and you've got a song called Spanish Sun in there as well. What is the link there with the Spanish Sun?
This could sound ridiculous, but
no, it won't.
When Liverpool got to the Champions League final in Madrid. No one could get tickets to, you know, the final or get planes or whatever. So I drove from Bournemouth, because I was working there at the time, picked my mates up, we went up to Glasgow, and then we had to fly down to southern Spain and then get the bullet train. And as I was on the bullet train going through what is quite a desert-like area in central Spain, I got the idea for Spanish Sun and basically wrote it in my head as I was moving along.
That's so amazing. That's great.
By the time I got to Madrid, I went straight into a guitar shop and, you know, recorded on my phone the basics of the song.
I love that. I love that this album has got those little things in there, as well as being, you know, about this horrible place where music is not to be enjoyed anymore. And the artwork that goes with it is quite deep, and it's when I first got the artwork, I thought it was amazing, because you don't get this very often these days, do you? You know, you used to get a nice big vinyl album and open it up, and you get booklets in there and lyric sheets, and that doesn't happen. But I love this sort of sepia, this brown artwork that come with it, with the stories and the lyrics that are kind of splattered across. Very difficult to describe on audio, so I suggest people just go and buy the album, and then they can have a look. That's the best way. But the characters in there, in these pictures, are beautifully illustrated, and they're kind of based on your friends, aren't they? The sort of, as you go through your life, your different people you've known. Interesting.
Yeah, the guys in the pub are all my friends, so they're all based on my friends. Some of the photographs aren't the most flattering. Well, some of the drawings aren't the most flattering, but I think they're all delighted to be sort of represented on the album.
I think this is great.
You know, they're all music lovers, and we put the jukebox on and we'll choose songs, and, you know, we'll have a playlist of maybe 30 songs if we're in the pub for a long time. It'll range from folk, it'll go to country, it'll go to, you know, a bit of Irish rebel stuff, if you know, and then it'll go to, as we get a bit more merry, some funk. You know,
oh yeah, a bit of funk. Yeah, love it. Yeah,
it goes everywhere. So.
Bit of Nile Rodgers.
Yeah, Nile. I've seen him a few times.
And that concludes part one of my chat with Stephen Lawson. Just click below for part two when you're ready.